There's any policy that I have.
So this is just a reminder that, and this is a citywide new policy, so all committees are recorded, and that's been the case, that the recordings will be posted to the website. So just to let everybody know that we are being recorded, and these will be uploaded to the website shortly after the meeting.
In a raw form.
In a raw form, that is correct. Thank you.
Swear. Okay, first order of business is the approval of the minutes of August 12th, 2019. And swear.
Aye.
Okay, next order of business is public participation. And we have Joanne Eggers here. Topic, memorials and climate.
Two items. One is memorials, and one of the things that I keep passing and wanting to mention is that memorial that was put in after the 1974 flood. It's down just above the van shelf, and originally it was a drinking fountain, which was really poorly designed and never worked very well. And then they planted a tree in there. It's a stone structure, and I noticed somebody's doing some activity around it now. And I think it's time to get rid of the plaque on there because
it mentions drinking fountain in some way, or
what?
Does it mention drinking fountain in some way, or
does,
what is
well,
it commemorating?
Well, it was a drinking fountain, but it's not.
What is it
because it didn't work. They planted a tree there 20 years ago, maybe. Yeah. Which is kind of silly to have it. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The stone thing with the tree in. Mm-hmm. I don't know why the tree came out. Maybe it wasn't healthy or
something.
It's
dead. We have a new one that's gone in.
Oh, that's too bad.
Same type of tree.
Because I think it's a silly structure. Is the plaque going to be taken off since it's timed out in their original installation? My concern is that the park look like a park and not a memorial gardens or a graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just wondering if this is a good time to take the plaque down.
It was from the 1980s?
1974.
1974. Well, based on our current policy, I think it would actually come out.
Well,
considered historic.
No, it would be considered a historic plaque. It would be different from a plaque that you put on a bench, which would have a 10-year lifespan. Yeah, it's a structure. Does the plaque refer directly to
the flood?
The structure?
I think it's a lion's plaque.
It was one of the
rotary
plaques. Rotary. But I know that the policy deals with and probably will continue to deal with stuff like that. And I just thought, well, this could help bring it up.
What could be moved? I guess is what you're saying. Is that right, Michael?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If it was dedicated, okay. So if it was specific to the drinking fountain, then when the drinking fountain went, the plaque would probably go as well. But if it was something commemorating the 1974 flood and was not context specific to the actual drinking fountain,
it was drinking fountain.
It was.
I was there. I remember they installed the drinking fountain.
So that
I thought it was a good idea.
Okay. Well, Mike and Sean and Bill probably had a plan for that one. Was it to keep it there and replace the drinking fountain?
So the irrigation had quit working to that planter bed, which is why the tree had died that was in that planter bed. Two people had approached parks workers about wanting that tree replaced and knew the specific variety of Japanese maple that it was. And so we went out and sourced the same type of tree to replace that tree with. And we've already purchased it. It's already sitting over in our nursery. Right now, Robbie is working on figuring out how to burrow underneath the concrete to put in a new water service line in there so that we can irrigate that tree and have it be an irrigated planter.
So my question is that a good place for a tree to be up that high?
Yeah.
And is it, it's okay? And
I think so.
See, I want you to say no, of course. And and do we need to go to the expense to replumb that when it might make more sense to plant a tree at ground level where it doesn't take all that?
To me, it's, well, so two things. To me, it's a historic structure because it goes back to the 70s and it commemorates the 74 flood. It was paid for by donations from the line, the Rotary.
Rotary, I think,
there's four benches or five benches that surround that that look like they're looking at that from a lower level.
Yeah.
And Japanese maple trees inherently get deer damage and they get, you know, the deer try and eat them. This is a very special variety of Japanese maple. And I think the way that it sits up above, looking down at it from the bench, looking up at the tree, could provide some aesthetic.
So it's a feature.
I think it's a feature. It will be when we're done fixing
it. And
it
was before.
And it was before.
Well, I just thought it was stupid. It's really good to hear your opinion. Thank you. I will feel differently for that tree. It's just like, you know, I thought maybe that was one way in which we were pushing the river and didn't need to.
Yeah.
So my other thing is very general, and it's climate change. And as you know, the city adopted the Climate Energy and Action Plan a year ago, 2 years ago, I don't know.
And I'm
wondering how Parks is incorporating the values of that plan into their capital improvements projects and maintenance and stuff like that. And one of the things that I would like to see is from the birth to the death of a project that the climate impacts, the greenhouse gases and other climate impacts be considered, because I think that's the intent of the SEEP plan. And so I just wanted to come and say that, and then I want to understand better how our Parks Department includes those concerns, issues, costs into budget and planning and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And you know, you may not have time to do that today. What?
I said I didn't set her up for this.
No.
By the way.
Oh no.
Oh, have you been asking the same question?
This would have to. Well, hey, I'm actually wondering the same thing she is. So, and I'm a commissioner. So, you know, that's the last part of the agenda is current sustainability measures. Informational, so hopefully we'll have a discussion on that.
Well,
and, I got a little material there you might want to flip through. You're probably familiar with the Valdez principles, I'm sure.
I have a story about
very,
that.
Very few people
we
even know
the Valdez principles. Okay. Some years later, when Dick Wanderscheid, who was a conservation person, said, "Well, we said we'd report on these to the council every 4 years, and all the." Department heads of county didn't have a copy of the Valdez principles. The city recorder didn't have a copy of the Valdez principles. And I said, I got a copy at home. And so I took it to the city recorder, and she copied my copy and sent it to all the people. I'm familiar with the Valdez principles.
Good. And I am too. But I was talking to our new conservation, his name's Stu, and he has no idea they exist. So I will quiz him the next time I see him.
And you were there when the parks adopted.
And it's a document that we should be reminding ourselves of continually.
Okay.
But anyway, that's
about what I had to say today.
Okay.
And I just
had
an opportunity to come say that.
Yeah. I didn't mean to cut you off, by the way. Sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, by the way.
No.
Oh, that's okay.
And to get back to your point is, I am hoping this is the subcommittee that is moving in that direction and all the things that you just mentioned, and I have a little a hit list of discussion topics that I'm still trying to...
And I'm willing to sit here until that comes up in your...
Yeah, well, I'm hopeful we can get through the boilerplate here quickly, then if we can move towards the business, we'll go to the standard memorial request action on that.
All right, so I had a request from Jill Estes, who would like to commemorate her late husband, Kyle, on a wooden bench that is going... that is part of the nature play area, so it's an existing bench. And she had been in conversation with park staff prior to the policy revision. I didn't know about it at the time that we were going through the policy, so the request is to honor that at the old price, which is $600. It's $150 less than what the new guidelines state. It will more than cover the bench that is going to be installed as part of the project.
And there's a bench being installed, or is it just a plaque being?
It's one of our standard wooden benches with the two steel posts that are embedded into the ground with wood slats, and there'll be the standard plaque. It's a standard memorial.
And so this will probably be the last of this holdover group then.
Correct.
Yeah. And where do they want it at?
Nature Play.
The new Nature Play?
Yes.
So we're installing another bench?
It's already there.
So yeah, one of the
installed
plaque. Exactly.
So they want to put a plaque on one of the two new benches we've already
put that in. Were planned in the original project.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I move to approve the memorial for Kyle Estes as proposed by staff.
I will second that. Roll call.
Aye.
Thank you. Great.
Now we move to standard memorial guidelines update.
Okay, so we had a request prior to the policy adoption for a bench to go on the Hunter tennis courts, and we did not have guidelines adopted for benches that go on courts. And so you can see this page here, which shows the preferred style of bench for tennis courts, which would be mounted into the ground, which are made out of powder-coated steel. And so this would be amend the document to include it in the guidelines, so it would be identified as a standard memorial and then would therefore be able to be approved by this committee.
Mm-hmm. And we have a way of affixing on a plaque on that at some point?
It's a little bit tougher than chiseling into the wood, but I spoke with the vendor who does our plaques, and there are He can do a bevel plaque that has some attachments through the back, so there'll be a way to get a plaque on there. Yes.
I guess my next question is this going to affect the bike polo in any way?
The bike polo.
They tend to clear the courts of everything.
So the placement of the request hasn't gone through. This won't approve the bench, this will just approve the guideline, and then the request would come, and so the placement of the bench could be reviewed to make sure it does not impact that. So place, I believe that's court eight.
So,
and is that a double court?
It's a single court, and that's the bike pole only plays on that one single court.
But they pull up the stanchions and the nets and all that, so it's all clear. And this would be affixed, so
these would go between. Like here's the courts; these would go between. Okay, so it wouldn't affect anything.
Okay, that's
but if, so you have a chain link fence that runs the length of the courts, and then there's an opening in the middle, right?
And that's where we're going.
And but the bench would have to be; it couldn't extend beyond the fence because that's a playable area. So the front of the bench couldn't extend beyond the line of the fence because that's a playable area.
Well, even if the fence is lined up this way, the bench would just be right in the middle.
Okay.
Even with
and that wouldn't interfere with the next tennis court over.
No. Okay. There used to be benches there before and somebody stole them. They were really nice, these really nice like Trex deck benches. You remember?
Yeah.
Remember those?
Trex deck, yeah.
And so somebody stole them. So there were, I think there was four and they're all gone, I believe.
Hmm.
Is there any there now? Do you know?
No. There's one.
I think they're all. Yeah, maybe there's.
There's
one.
There's a couple in Lithia.
The review of all the memorials, there was a couple benches over there. They're removable and they're made out of like the paper compost type thing, like the artificial decking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like the
Trex deck.
Yeah, and so. You know, when working with parks, they wanted to go to something more longer lasting.
And this is usable for both courts then, if you have it in between the
chains. Yeah, that's why there's no back on it, so you can sit and look on either side.
And even if this is adopted, I don't know that the request will come through because they were proposing bringing in a similar style bench that is undesirable because of maintenance and length of life issues. And so once this is presented as the option, they may say never mind, but we kind of knew that was going to happen once guidelines were established to make sure that whatever is being put into the parks is something that has can be dealt with maintenance-wise, longer lasting, less money, and that it's something that parks wants.
Okay, and so we're amending our brand new policy change. Is this the first amendment of the policy change then, or it's an addition to it?
Just the administrative document, which identifies the standard guidelines, so it wouldn't be touching the policy. So this is just the administrative document.
And that's why we made them separate, so every time you change the type of bench, you wouldn't have to amend the policy itself.
Right, I got
so.
You.
So it's my understanding this would not go back to the commission, that this committee has purview over what's in the administrative policy guideline.
Sounds all reasonable to me. So I would move to include the guidelines and listed costs of sports courts, benches, and the standard memorial administrative procedures.
Seconded.
Second. Those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
All right. Organic land management update.
So we had met with Chip Osborne. Several of us had gone out to Talent to participate in his introduction training program, and seen some results that they had put forth for their organic land management process. Then we had him out to the golf course for breakfast and showed him around a little bit, talked to him about different organic land management strategies in this special program that they're putting on, where they provide the land manager with soil tests and a specific prescription for treating the land in an organic fashion for a certain number of years to see the results that they're touting with their organic land management process. And we had talked about entering into that agreement with Chip Osborne on a test plot or several test areas in parks. Had heard nothing but crickets from Chip Osborne, so reached back out to them several times through Christina Lefevre and Lisa Arkin, who are the two that put on the land training and brought him here. They got a hold of him, and he is still willing to take us on as a test case and write a prescription for us and do some soil testing. It doesn't cost us anything. We could start in the spring, and that's where we're at right now. So we're waiting to get
places picked out
spring.
Or potential places.
I need to get together with Michael and talk about it further and figure out how much we want to commit to at this point and what logistically which areas would be.
We were thinking the golf course was the main topic, the main area, or the only area to start with. But we'd talk more about it.
Because this is just a test
it's
of
a
the
test,
whole system.
Yeah.
And what group is he with, Chip?
Osborne Organics is his name brand or his
that's probably on
his side business.
And when I say the golf course, it would be a portion.
Yep, it would just be, we were talking like one fairway, one green, maybe
no,
a two.
We did
marks.
Talk about one park, but we'll figure it out and bring it back to you guys.
Anything else?
That's it on the organic land management update part.
Okay. Current sustainability measures, informational.
So right now we are in the design and costing phase, looking at putting together a fairly unique design for converting Clay Street Park to TID, and then seeing if we have the resources to convert that park. That was under goal 16, I think it is coming up with innovative solutions that will pay for themselves over X number of years. We're working with the city on green equipment and giving them, there's a back and forth going on right now with regards to electric equipment, small electric equipment. versus the two-stroke powered small equipment that we're using. We have purchased, we have two backpack blowers that are battery powered now. We have two weed eaters and a chainsaw. And we just recently purchased a handheld blower for the tennis courts for the pickleballers to use to blow off the pickleball courts before their practices and games during the day. And so we've done a few, we're doing some tests, and I've been looking into all different types of equipment on the market right now. In the back and forth that I have with the city, the city manager the city maintenance manager and I have been talking. We have the same issues with regards to the battery powered equipment right now just doesn't have the longevity of use or the power that we need out of the equipment that we're using. So if you look at like cubic feet per second that comes out, CFS that's exuded by these blowers, the battery powered equipment right now are half of what a gas powered blower can do, twice the cost, and the battery only lasts for about an hour and a half versus a tank of fuel, which lasts for 2.5 hours. So the technology it's improving. It's getting lighter weight. The batteries are becoming lighter. They're becoming longer lasting, holding more more energy in a smaller package. And the price seems to be coming down a little bit, but it's still fairly difficult to just convert the entire operation because we are also short-staffed. We have limited time in the day. So we're coming up with solutions. We're working with the city, Stu Green in particular, and Adam Hanks, trying to figure out a plan moving forward to phase out over a long period of time while still being able to deliver on the results that everybody expects from the Parks Department.
I assume that you're already doing this, but there's no area that could be left unleaf blowed, for example? I mean, I'm assuming that you're only blowing whatever is the minimum that you need to do, but...
Yeah, we're looking at that too, as far as if there are areas that we could leave a little bit more rough. And I think when we adopted the integrated pest management plan, I think that most of the areas that were refined were considered like high maintenance landscape beds. At that point, we kind of left them. That was kind of part of the give and take with taking on a more organic approach to the flower beds and the shrub beds. And I think aesthetically it's a matter of opinion, but I think that we've lost some of those beds. I would hate to commit to too much wild area with regards to not cleaning it up too, like as far as I think that in the natural areas of Lithia Park, we blow the leaves from the lawns so they don't kill the lawns, just into the beds, and they just naturally break down like they would. It's not like we're physically removing those leaves and putting them somewhere. In the areas like parking lots, high-end landscape areas like around the front of the park, entrance signs, building areas right into the entrance of buildings, we do go through and pick up those leaves and that debris and manage that. So I think we have eliminated the areas that we could easily, but we continue to look at it because, you know, we don't want to be doing work that we don't need to be doing anyways.
Yeah, right.
And that's only one aspect of the whole battery-powered cadre that's coming around. It seems like before we commit to anything, we should vet these things, you know, like you say. Set somebody out, let them try it, come back, get some feedback, and place it in a priority list of, well, this is working great, and these carry a couple extra batteries, and it's going to work just fine, as opposed to having taken longer to do jobs. So that we have to kind of factor that in the scene. So we want to vet all the stuff before we commit to going buying it all. And I think the next step we should consider is as the budget cycle comes up, getting the bigger ticket items, you know, whether there's a four-wheeled
machine that isn't gas operated, that, you know, and how much fuel do we actually use, and put that into perspective, saying where's the high fuel use coming from our maintenance, and then, you know, let's not go to the least valuable. Let's look, and that's probably the most expensive too, but it's like our golf carts. We're moving to electric golf carts, which, you know, obviously should have happened way back, because we're Bonneville Power and we get a great rate on electricity, so it just makes sense that way. So you know, I would hope that you guys do the evaluation of all this new stuff, because there's even mowers and things like that, you know, that I know my friends who have lawns, they rave about their battery-powered mowers, but then, you know, in a commercial use, things are different, you know. It's not it's not somebody's front yard, it's a whole acreage thing.
So we're not trying to switch over anything right now, and if we were, that would be a larger policy decision, but I did authorize them to purchase a few things, and then with vehicles, and we are evaluating those so far. You heard the evaluation so far. But with vehicles, though, it's automatic that we do look at battery powered first to see if there's something or some type of alternative to gasoline. But that's, so we see things showing up in fleet, like at the golf course, all of our carts are now electric. And we, like I said last night, we've got a couple of other electric carts out there. I agree with you. The larger policy-related thing, I'm glad to hear you say that's a discussion that really needs to be had, and all things need to be considered. Efficiency is one of those, and because we are providing a big park, a lot of parks for people within the community, and we need to be able to maintain those. I do see the city moving kind of in this direction where they'd like to probably come up with a policy where these small gas engines are not allowed anymore.
Yeah, I can tell you that the Climate Policy Committee, which is one of the city's committees, is planning on asking the city council to ban gas-powered two-stroke engines except for chainsaws in the city. And that would probably be starting with city departments. And then also to ban natural gas burning fireplaces. You know, like the one that you see in front of the brewery or the...
Growler. Rusting Co. has one.
Right.
It's an outdoor.
Mix has one downstairs and like those kinds of things. So there is a plan which is not finalized by any means, but is working its way towards the council with the idea that it will be hopefully approved by the council, and then that will actually ban those devices. Is it possible to, I know that you know, at the moment we maintain at a variety of different levels the different areas that are publicly used at the parks, but also the more like the heavily used areas, we maintain them at different levels. Is it possible to, you know, leave them less maintained for a period of 2 or 3 years potentially, waiting until we can actually put the money together to, or to be able to use the equipment that we have at the moment to maintain those things at a less, lower level, let's say, or less frequent.
Yeah. I think these are really big conversations. Like that's changing the way that we maintain stuff in anticipation that the city council would adopt something like that. I think it's a bigger discussion than what the city council is thinking. If they're just thinking they're going to adopt something that outright bans the small gas engines and things like that, those two cycle things and whatever. But
I don't know that the city council is thinking about it. Really, it's just the climate policy committee that's thinking about it. The council,
and
that's, I think, has seen it.
This goes back to a conversation I think that was had about glyphosates, about banning them, period, off of shelves, which turned out to be not what ended up happening. But there's a difference between us creating a policy or the city creating a policy that says that we won't use them, as opposed to telling everybody in the city that they can't use their small machines anymore, which I think is a much bigger,
hugely problematic.
Yeah, and would take quite a bit of time. And I think probably someday we're going to get there, but I don't think that would happen too soon. But I think even if the city were to go with a, like if they were to, if SEEP were to recommend to the city council, let's go away from these weed eaters, blowers, and things like that that are combustible. And, you know, if they decided to do that, we would definitely need to come up with a response to that. And then the other question would be is, would it apply automatically to Ashland Parks and Recreation, or would the commissioners have to also adopt it? See what I mean?
Well, so, I think APRC could take it on all by itself as a project within our, under our own roof, and then the city council could, you know, make their own decisions about how the rest of the city is going to take it on.
And I think the point I was trying to make is, let's evaluate where is the high fuel use going. There's a priority list of the ones. Some, there's so little fuel use, so that's, if we clean that up and it's maybe easier, there's not a lot of value. The stuff that uses more fossil fuels is the ones we want to evaluate. And so evaluations before commitment. And it seems like, I know how the system works. You guys need to get in on this group and explain to them the reality of the big world. And you know, there's self-righteousness, and then there's reality. So you have to balance those two. You know,
yeah. Right?
Okay,
the reality is that we are never going to ban any of this stuff, right? That is the reality.
I don't see that. The glyphosate got
limited hugely. Well, let me.
It's all over the
you mean banning, like, well, for commercial use, for personal use as well?
I mean, just like not using it.
Well, yeah,
mean us or the whole,
well,
whole community.
At the rate we're going.
I think there's a chance that. I don't think it's a chance. I think there's an inevitability that we will go there, that we will get there. I just don't. I think the lesson we learned with the IPM policy is we don't want to jump in with both feet. We want to create a plan to get to where we need to get to, and not do it before we're prepared. And so as technology gets better, the battery lives get better, maybe costs come down as well, things like that, we can start phasing things in according to a plan. But I don't think financially it's viable, nor operationally it's viable right now to do it. So I don't think we could do it right now.
It will never be financially viable. It will never be operationally viable.
Actually, Joanne's first.
If I may. If
yes.
No,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So one thing I'm thinking is that I think the city emits only like, what, 8% or something of the total greenhouse gas in our community. Some of it's very significant.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small percentage. However, the city parks, which a lot of people love, live in, appreciate, can be an example to help the change happen in the community. I think that is really, really important. The other piece I want to say is that, well, first an example. If I was drinking a cup of coffee, sitting down in front of a restaurant on Lithia Way, and a kid gets run over in the street, oh, I think I'll finish drinking my coffee before I go give aid to that kid. It's an emergency. Put down my coffee and go do something. That's where we are with climate change. It's a climate emergency, and we're denying our children and future generations a livable world if we say it's too expensive and it's just not convenient. And I kind of understand the other arguments, but it's just the compelling character of what climate change is doing to our planet is so overwhelming that I think we're responsible to do something about it wherever we can.
So I would, yeah, and I think that there, as far as I've seen for the last 9 or 10 years that I've been trying to, you know, in my own very small way, trying to make a difference to these sorts of issues, it seems to me that at the rate that we're going, there will never come a time when it will be acceptable to do this stuff. Like, it is going to hurt no matter how you do it. It has to hurt because we don't like to get to where we need to be. We have to actually stop using the stuff that we're using. And I mean, I'm not saying that you guys are like up to no good and it's like you're all bad and
you're us, so you know, and you're up to no good too. But the point that Joanne made about us as an example, kudos. That I've already started that thought process, but we're not going to go to the Grange Co-op and say, you guys got to get all your glyphosate off the shelves.
I would never suggest.
No, I would suggest it. I was suggesting people go pick it out front. You want to get, Christina needs to go get picketers out front and start the process of a movement. It can't be, the law, I think, is set that you, I don't think the state allows a municipality to ban glyphosate in their community. If we could, I would be the first one, Julian would be the first one, and I'd be following him to say, and you would be there too. So I think that's what I'm talking about, being self-righteous and being realistic. There, it's a balance. You know, we have places we want to go. I agree with you on a lot on the climate change, but sustainability is a complete different thing, and that's kind of what I want to touch on. We can talk about carbon, but it's not just the carbon fuel use. Everything has a carbon debt. This pen, this pad, that cup, everything has a debt. The longer we can use that, the more we amortize out the debt. So if you have an electric motorcycle and the batteries you can't get, and you trash that bike and it's 8 years old, that's not finishing off your carbon debt. So everything, sustainability, the straws, the single use, there's a myriad of things. It's not only on diesel fuel and two-cycle gas. That's part of it, but it's really, if we're really talking about moving forward, it's a full spectrum move, and it's way more complicated than we can all understand right now, but the more you go and read up and the more you study, the more you vet your own ideas.
So the question for us is not to be, the issue is not to be overwhelmed by everything everybody in the world is doing that is aggravating climate change or not helping to solve the problem. It's to say, what can we do? And I consider this a we. I mean, you know, the Parks Department, a love. I consider it's us, it's me, it's all of us together. It's not like I don't feel adversarial, I feel supportive, and I want us to do the best we can for our community and the whole wide world, you know. But it's what can we do? And so let's not get overwhelmed by
the Grange Co-op. Can I just say real quick? So I think that's what we're here to talk about is what we can do. But Julian, I have to say that I disagree. I think we will get there. I think we will eventually have not be using the gas-powered blowers and weed eaters and things like that. I really do think that we'll get there. We can't jump in and do the one that's going to make the biggest impact or be the most noticeable to begin with. It's these things that Jim's talking about that we can do and that we already do. And, you know, there's a lot of things that we do as Ashland Parks and Recreation to help with this problem.
And if I could get to that, I submitted this, I think one of our very first meetings, if everybody would just take a quick look at it. I would start at the bottom because I realized that's the one that people tend to be drawn to. I say discuss policy changes that don't involve large unfunded expenditures because it's somewhat unrealistic. That's a budgetary 2-year cycle. We have to talk about them, but we have to be ready for that when that point comes around. The second of the bottom bullet points. APRC has taken a leadership role in policies involving trees, pollinators, pest management. We need to take a leadership role in zero waste and carbon reduction as well. That's where you're talking about. We should show the people where you remember we were going to do a green business thing in town, and we were the first ones to sign up. No other department signed up for the green business thing. We were proactive about that. Every time we want to be problem solvers, and so we tend to do things that do show the rest of the community that we want to be the solution as opposed to the problem. So I think we can take a huge role if we want to take that huge role.
Sure question. There was a green team, didn't we have a member?
Yeah.
Somebody from, do we still have that person designated?
I think that's ancient history.
Green,
I think Robin ran that.
Okay. So
she
ran
the whole.
We don't have anybody in the department whose name is attached to that effort because it was a valuable effort, no matter what you call it or who got designated.
Well, I don't know that the green team exists anymore, but we have an innovation team. We have this sustainability group.
Uh-huh.
or whatever we're calling this, conservation group, and these people are assigned to that now. Mm-hmm. And we've got things that Libby's doing that are helping mm-hmm. with this, but we don't have somebody on the Climate Energy Action Committee.
Actually, we do.
Okay, then you have to like talk to these guys to make sure we're going.
Well, actually, I don't know, were you assigned to that by the commissioners?
Well, I don't know by who exactly, but yeah, the commissioners.
No, I think the mayor asked you to be on there, which is, I think is great that you're on there, but I think he asked Julian Bell to be on there.
Oh, not Julian Bell, APRC commissioner.
Exactly. Yeah, so sure. I think yeah, that formalized. Needs to be established, that it's a formal, that APRC is actually involved in that. You're filling that position, but it's not, but it needs to carry on into the future.
I'm all for that.
So the next one from the bottom, discussion of replacement of park benches, tables, seating, construction of non-plastic recyclable materials. Hey, we can check that one off the list. I think our new policy and the standards covers a lot of that. The discussion, these are all just discussion points. Discussion of establishing a composting system for the Parks Department. I'm not advocating it and say we have to do it. I'm just saying, hey, let's talk about it. Is it viable? Is it worthy? Is it something that would help the community and would help us as parks? You know, just that's a discussion item. And then the Valtizer principles. I mean, Joanne made the point of nobody knows these things exist. And so we got to keep reminding everybody constantly that we've signed on to this 20 some years ago, probably. And we haven't. You know, it's something that we want to put in the bottom of the file somewhere, because if you read them, it's like, wow, that's a lot. That's a big thing to take on. And the city tends to do lip service a lot, but when it's time to hit the, you know, get it going, you don't have as much interest in it. Jason?
We put I don't know if you know this, but when we do our capital improvement projects, we put our things out to bid. We put a copy of the Valdez principles in that.
Okay, mm-hmm. Great. Yeah, I'd like to hear that. I need to hear more of that kind of stuff, that we're actually proactive about the things that we signed up for and then we ignore. So anyway, remind people, I want this conservation, I want Stu to know these exist. I think, I was kind of shocked, actually. I know he's only worked here for a couple of years, but he needs to get up to speed on that. And a discussion of extracted carbon reduction through parks maintenance and design. We're starting to discuss that right now. And there's a lot of points on that spectrum too, as far as the maintenance part. And this is the subcommittee to do that. This is current parks conservation and maintenance. So this is a brand new subcommittee. I think this is, now we can start formulating policies for the whole department. I'm excited about that, and I want to hear from staff. I'm a big delegator. You guys are the experts. I'm just some guy, you know. So you guys tell me where we can go and what we can do and ideas. And when I found out about the circumference of a big mowing machine, and you want to design your lawn so you don't have to get the little mower out, I go, well, that's genius, but you guys had already thought about that, and I just hear it and think, hey, what a good idea. I'm sure there's hundreds of those things out there that we can do in little ways. The purchasing practice policy is a budget item, but we want to be ready for it when the budget comes up, that we have a plan in place for this new non-carbon lend-a-play. You know, this is the kind of thing. I know some of the people who are part of this, and it's a fabulous group of people in town, and they do weddings. They do they've done the Salmon Festival 2 years in a row. You get your food from the cart. They give you a bowl, silverware, and a glass, and then they wash it when it's done. It's genius, but it's an incremental thing that the more we institute that into parks, actually the whole city should be doing that. We should never have big black plastic bags full of plastic spoons and plates. And so, you know, this is more than just diesel fuel and two-cycle oil. It's you know, we want to look at the whole picture, because it's really, if we're going to implement anything and get through this, you have to do it in a broader front than zero in on one thing that you could do. So I'm all about looking at that as a policy. We should. You were the one who said, "Why do we have plastic bottles?" It was one of those little things that was, you know, decade ago.
I don't even remember that.
Well, I totally remember that because I remember things that are kind of an epiphany. I'm going, we should never have a plastic bottle, you know, the screw top kind of, you know, and it's just such so easy to implement that kind of stuff.
Do you remember when I invited Jim McGinnis to our meeting about 20 years ago? After he just trained with Al Gore. Everybody thought I was nuts.
Just other little small things, but if you look out on all those piles out there, all the piles we made, there's no plastic on them.
Oh, yeah.
In
the old days, it was 6 mil.
Well, the Forest Service still does. They throw plastic on all their piles and burn. But we went to paper about 10 years ago, and it's not as great, but it works.
Yeah. Now you want to talk to the people with the hemp fields next.
Yeah, yeah.
It's another issue.
But I want to thank you for the Christmas trees. I came up here.
Yeah.
Sunday and cut the tops off some of the stuff at the bottom of the
hill. Oh, yeah,
and, yeah. All right, it's a Christmas tree.
A tree is right
there. There you go.
So, Jim, these are, I think, excellent ideas, but at the moment, at least, like, it's the greenhouse gas pollution that we are actively generating that's the main issue, I think. I mean, these things are also important.
Everything has a greenhouse gas emission. It's my carbon debt. Point. You tell me what here didn't take a carbon burning to create.
The light. Even the batteries and the battery power tools.
The light, the photons, or the actual emitter, the thing that making the light? What are we
the
talking
photons.
About?
Huh? I mean, we do, you know, like if everything in the city was run on electricity and there were no, you know, fossil fuel burning engines, then we would be almost completely fossil fuel, you know, neutral.
And I guess that...
Because we use Bonneville Power for the most part, although not entirely.
And that defaults to the very last discussion point is unfunded expenditures. I will lobby with you to move towards that, and we should be moving towards that. And I think there is... It's an incremental movement. You're already on this new commission that his job is to look at those things. And we're talking about how do we reduce it here. But... These are hugely expensive. That your battery plan is a fabulous plan to get a container of lithium ion, and that's a
iron
storage.
And potassium.
Huh? Or
iron and potassium, not lithium.
And whatever will work, but I'm assuming that's a fairly large budget item, and then that's the issue with the solar. When it's cloudy, guess what? Every evening you lose your energy source. So we're working, you know, this is an amazing transition that we probably, you know, I'm not to have my opinion out there, but we're probably arranging deck chairs on the Titanic, but we can't not do that, you know. Me personally, we have always made a commitment to try to live simply personally, but, you know, it's more than just that. It's getting everybody else to do it.
But here's the thing. So we, at the moment, let's say for the sake of argument, we are emitting 100% of our current fossil fuel emissions. I know that at some point in the future, we will eventually work our way down to zero as we continue to do exactly what we're doing at the moment and replace it slowly with, you know, with battery-powered Bonneville electricity source devices. So that's fine. Like, there's this linear sort of pathway that we're on, but that actually isn't going to get us where we need to be quick enough. So what I'm suggesting is that we actually change what we are taking on as responsibilities so that we really consume less, I don't know, fossil fuel energy for the time being until we, so that we decrease our budget, hopefully, or we decrease our emissions, hopefully, so that we can more or less exchange them for electrical devices. So as a very simple example, I'm not saying that, like, I'm the person to make this happen necessarily. I'm just saying that, as opposed to, you know, either saying that there's nothing we can do because it's hopeless, or eventually we'll get there and we'll just wait for the time to come, perhaps what we can do in the meantime is come up with some sort of a mechanistic plan whereby we I know that we've already cut back on what we can cut back on in any sort of normal way, but we cut back on the tasks that we are taking on so that we reduce our total greenhouse gas emissions, and then we work to try and exchange that for electrical powered devices of one sort or another. So, like, the simplest example is leaf blowing a part, or, you know, a lawn in the front of Lithia Park, for example. So perhaps we stop leaf blowing half of it, and the other half of it, I mean, this is, you know, for the sake of argument, not meant to be actually the plan that we might use going forward, but for the sake of argument, we stop leaf blowing half of it, and we put up a sign that says, we are not leaf blowing this one half of our lawn, because we can't do it with the electrical equipment we currently have. But we can leaf blow the other half of it with the electrical equipment and have no greenhouse gas emissions. And so for the sake of this particular task, that's what we're going to do. So we could, I mean, again, as I say, like leaf blowing the lawn is a very sort of simple and easily understood plan, but perhaps we can come up with a scheme of different steps that are more or less analogous to that going forward, where we, you know, within perhaps a year, we are down to a low enough amount of emissions that we can more or less replace them with existing technology. I mean, that's at least my goal. When I say sustainable, that's what I mean. Because, you know, at the moment, as I said the other night, anything that we are doing, which means flying around airplanes, using two-cycle engines, driving a car that uses gas, whatever it is, burning gas in the fireplace, downstairs at Mix, all of that is totally unsustainable. So if our goal is to be sustainable, all of that has to go.
In the SEEP plan, there's a goal set of a certain percentage reduction per year. So I'm thinking, the on-the-ground people here and throughout the park system know best what's being done and what can be cut. I think it would be great to have a brainstorm of the people, on-the-ground people, with others, with policy types too, to say, okay, if the goal in the city plan is cutting 8% a year, what are your ideas about how we can get there?
So, follow on from what Joanne's saying, you know, I think I said to Michael that some of this is going to wind up being painful, and I don't mean that it's going to be like individually painful, like somebody sticks a skewer in you, but I do think it is potentially going to mean that the Parks and Recreation portfolio of parks isn't going to look in quite the same as people have been used to going forward into the future. So, you know, for example, if we don't maintain them with gas-powered leaf-blowing devices, they're definitely not going to look as tidy, the grass isn't going to look as great. But I mean, I think that if people in the city are committed to trying to decrease our greenhouse gas footprint, well, that's actually what they're talking about. And I don't know that it's necessarily painful for us, but I mean, those are the voters' parks. And if the voters are content to have their parks look that way, and that's, you know, for the sake of like doing something about climate change, well, that's how it's going to have to work. And it's going to have to work in that way for everything that the city is doing.
And I think that that's a big conversation that needs to happen over a period of time with a lot of public input. And, you know, but some of the things that Jim's bringing up, those are all things that could be implemented.
And the things that Joanne is talking about is her, the perfect point is you guys are the ones who understand it infinitely better than we do. So me, maybe I'm not all that excited about having a bunch of leaves on the lawn that are killing the lawn and we have a aesthetic issue. We need to find ways to meet or exceed our part of the plan to reduce in ways that are smart, you know. If we want to make the lawns look ugly and say, hey, well, you guys are going to have to kick in more money to us so we can hire more people with rakes, you know, this manual leaf removal, you know, and a human puts out 1 kilo of carbon dioxide a day just breathing. So, you know, it's probably a better trade-off than a two-cycle. Anyhow, we got to be smart about it and hopefully, and do it in ways that, A, have the most dramatic effect in the actual amount, and try to keep our aesthetics, and not to quote Joanne once again, but the glyphosate, we're going to have a few more weeds in town, you know, and that, I don't know if you remember that one too, but you're full of these these little comments that you should write down and remember, because I took that one away too, and I said, you know, that's the reality.
If I had a memorial service, we'd go on. Come on, please.
Great quotes by Joanne.
I wanted to say right now is that, you know, Michael, you said this is a big conversation and it needs a lot of public input. I would like you to consider the fact that the SEEP plan, we had the big conversation and we had tons of community input. Maybe we don't have to repeat that. I don't think we need to repeat that process.
I think the part we have to do our due diligence on is informing, really talking to the public about the specific impacts, like a change in the way parks are maintained, things like that.
I'm just saying, we've already got our policy, our values from the community, our guiding document. That's what, we're one community. I mean, I used to like to think of parks as kind of a separate kingdom, but we really weren't ever that point.
No, I think we are. We do follow the policies of the city, but this, I think it's one thing to have. I mean, nothing in the. I don't think there's anything in the seat that says specifically says one of the tasks is to amend the way in which we maintain our grounds. And
no, it's to say we're aiming for 8%.
Exactly, which is why we would need to have the larger community conversation.
Yeah.
That's why we need to have a larger conversation about the specific impact and just letting people know what the changes would be if that's the route we're going.
Could I suggest a plan, perhaps?
Yeah.
So if we, would it be possible for staff to develop with the idea that we would inventory in a general sense, not like by the drip, but in a general sense, how much, you know, gasoline, diesel, and whatever else it is that we consume, how much we use, where it goes, again, in a very general sense, so that we could have an idea of if we got rid of all of that, what would fall apart and how quickly. And if you can give me some sort of general idea of what that would look like, then I can potentially write an article for the Tidings from APRC with your approval that says, you know, to the citizens, to the voters of the city of Ashland, like, we are on board with this idea of reducing our greenhouse gas emissions, but you have to understand that the parks are going to look different if we do that, and there are going to be things that we are not going to be able to do, and so be aware of that.
So I think what we could do is, as a work topic, we could get some information. I think it's a good starting point. There might be other lower starting points that we could actually look at, but we can look at our gasoline usage, and in general, we could break it down by like large equipment, small equipment, and vehicles or something like that, something along those lines, where it is all going. But I think that's something that we would need to look at here, discuss, but before anything could be announced as APRC wants to do anything, I think you would have to go from here to the commission talk about.
I think this is, for me, this is the starting point. I'm enjoying this discussion immensely because I wanted to do this way back when. And so I know we had our plaques and memorials thing, got that out of the way. Now my hope is we can concentrate on discussion about this. Before we commit to anything, let's find out where we're going, what's the quickest, easiest, best, and most effective impacts that we can do to reduce, to be the leaders. And then I think the article we do is to ask the community about glyphosate use, about single use instruments, reduced walking, anything we knew, just like that's, we're in recreation, we're in healthful, that's our job, that's what we do, it's, you know, and we make venues for people to enjoy themselves socially and also exercise and be more healthful. This is part of that, I see, and we could kind of broaden it a little bit and to be more effective and being the leaders of saying, kind of, here's things you can do and here's the things that would reduce it the most. And I know the city is working towards people converting to electric. They're pushing pretty hard, and they're giving some tax credit or some monetary credits for people to do that. That's a great thing. We have a broad front. Let's not get fixated on lawn blowing and two-cycle fuel. I just think we're narrowing down on that. And for me, I want to broaden it out. I want to
If I'm going to present something to the citizens, what I want to ask them about is just a single question, not like, what do you think about glyphosate and two-cycle engines and lawn maintenance and everything else? All I want to ask them about is, do you want to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from APRC? And if so, this is likely to be what it's going to look like. How does that sound?
I think it's all presumptive in that you're saying it's going to look bad if
we reduce. No, I don't know what it's going to look like.
It's almost threatening, kind of, in some ways.
Well, I don't think we could even get to that point. I don't think we can get to that point until we actually bring back some information, talk about where the fuel usage is, and what it looks like to reduce that. Because we don't, right now, we don't know That only one of the options is to reduce by reducing maintenance. That's one of the options. Another option is to reduce by changing out equipment, things like that. So I think we need to just focus. Let's focus on something and get some information back and talk about that and have the roundtable discussion about where to go with that information and what it means. But we're focusing. I mean, this is a. It would be a big transition right now to go away from gas, and I think that we need to start working on it so that eventually someday we'll be prepared to do that. But while we're working on that, there's lots of other things going on as well. This stuff can be talked about, and we can figure out what things we could implement. Like the city in their food policy is implementing a zero waste, or at least not zero waste just yet, I don't think, but using the what is it called, the lend me a plate and things like that. So there's little things like that we can do where we're already working on different policies and stuff. There's also things that we can take credit for that maybe we're not tooting our horns about enough, like the swimming pool. I mean, we have the opportunity with the swimming pool to get completely off of natural gas. And
you mean the entire APRC will no longer be using natural gas?
No, with the swimming pool itself. With the swimming pool. But we can only do things by project. You know, one project by project. So, you know, that's something that we can say, well, we're working towards that right now. And this group could be when we get the designer in and we're talking to them, this group could give some feedback on where we'd like to see that go. You know, that's something that this group can do right now as well.
There are, you know, many different things that we can do, and lending a plate is a great idea and everything, but the poison is the greenhouse gas emissions. And so, for me, like, I understand that there's lots of other things on there, out there
it's
that are...
It's all greenhouse gas emissions. Everything we're talking about.
Well, I understand that it's all greenhouse
you're
gas
not,
emissions.
You're not looking at
poison.
The big picture, though, I think. You're not saying that a paper plate took some greenhouse gas to make. If we don't use that paper plate, then we don't have to use fossil fuels to make the plate. A plastic spoon is made from fossil fuel. Let's go down the list. I mean, I know it's a hard concept to grasp in one big fell swoop, but it's natural gas.
I'm just tired of being distracted by other stuff.
Yeah, natural gas is CH4.
It's
gasoline
toxic.
Has got way more carbon. Coal has way more carbon.
Gas sucks. If there's more than 3% leakage from the well to wherever it's actually burnt, it's as bad as coal for the atmosphere as far as trapping greenhouse gases.
It's actually 20
it is just
times
as bad.
Worse. Methane's way worse. Way worse than carbon dioxide.
It's bad. I think we all get that it's bad. But I don't see it as being distracted. We don't have the ability to change the big things like overnight. While we're working on those things, I don't think it's distracting at all to work on other things at the same time. And
working on the other things. We are already working on these other things. We already use the lend-a-plate system. It's not like we're not working on them. I just don't want to leave it at that.
I think I committed to having our staff bring back information on gasoline so we can start looking at where we could make a larger impact.
Yeah.
But I don't want there to be any misunderstanding. It's a process that we're going to have to work through for a while. I don't think it's going to solve. We're going to be able to just say, okay, well, it looks like we spend the most here. Let's change that right away. It's going to take a while. I mean, and some discussion, and the rest of the commissioners are going to have to buy off on it.
Right. So, I understand it. And I understand that there's a process and a sequence and like it's not going to happen overnight and all those things. But we actually have to start like inventorying our emission or where our emissions come from, including from, you know, food that we otherwise serve on paper plates. But we have to actually like inventory those emissions to know where the emissions
okay.
are.
Okay. And that's what I'm talking about. We're talking about doing things and continuing to do things that indirectly reduce our carbon footprint with the plates and things like that. What we can start doing, what I'm telling you guys, is that as staff, the next time we meet, we can have some information about our direct carbon input footprint in the gas that we use.
Okay.
And we can start having that discussion. But it's a long discussion. It's going to be probably more than one meeting. I don't think we're going to solve it in one meeting. But we'll bring that information back, and then we're getting started working on those bigger things.
Okay.
Talking to Stu, I mentioned about these principles. He hasn't seen them. And I invited him to our meetings, maybe not necessarily this one, and he told me he was too busy. You know, that's code. I understand code. To me, that was something I took away and didn't feel great about it. He's the guy who's in charge, a staff person in charge of what we're all talking about, and he doesn't have time to come to our meeting. I want to have people come through our meetings who are part of the city's system. The recycling group is a good group to come in and talk. Risa Buck has all kinds of interesting ideas about reduction of things, and it's not all about fossil fuel maintenance use. It's more than that. So we need to move on all fronts. I'm with you. I'd like to stop that tomorrow. I wish I could afford an electric car, but you know, not ready yet. I don't fly much at all. I try not to, you know, but that's just me personally. How do we get not only the city, we're 10% of the city budget, maybe not even that. The city is a pretty good entity, and then as you were saying, the total amount of use of the city of Ashland compared to the community of Ashland, that's the next one. That's a much harder one. That's what you're saying. It's like that's a whole community discussion about where we really want to go. And hopefully, I don't know how we get there, whether this group that has just started is that venue to that procedure or whatever it's called to get to that point where we get to the rest of the community and say, anything you can reduce is going to help.
Yeah.
You know? And just think about it. You know, if we got to take your sport utility vehicle and you take your one kid to school and back, you know, there's a myriad of things, and it's insurmountable in some ways, but I'm hopeful that we all pull for the team and we work to that direction, and it's not happening overnight, and we've just started this group and discussion here, and I don't know about the cities, how they are. I'd like to know more about it. That's why I was inviting Stu.
So
Stu, come and tell me what you're doing, please.
Did he say he can't come to this meeting, or
I said,
or in general, he's too
I
busy
said,
to
well,
come to our
you
meetings.
Know, and bureaucrats are always saying they're busy because if they had time to sit around and screw up, then, you know, well, why do we have that? So I kind of understand that was but anyway, I would seriously invite him at some point. Maybe it was too flippant at a city luncheon.
I think he has some time to plan that he can make it to the meeting. I don't think it's a
problem. No, okay,
yeah.
It's a problem either.
Yeah, and I think Mike originally was going to have people come in, maybe some people from SOU, and, you know, just a whole list of people we could potentially maybe invite in to in our discussions, and then get enlightened here, find out where they're dealing with their problems in some other way, and we can.
Well, I can tell you a little bit about it. So we have the SEAP, which is the existing,
and
you know,
that's an acronym for
Climate Energy Action Plan.
Thank you.
So with the Climate Policy Committee, which was otherwise known as the Climate Policy Advisory Committee, was appointed by the commissioners and the mayor to work on an update of the SEAP and other recommendations. And that was divided into three different groups. One of them was administrative stuff. One of them was, I forget, something else. And the other one is the built environment, which is the committee that I'm on. And the built environment is in charge of, well, it sort of seems like everything, because everything in the city is a built environment. So the first thing that we are recommending is banning two-stroke engines. So that's what's going on.
And that's within the city of Ashland, not the community of Ashland.
Well, I mean, it's kind of wherever the city council thinks that they can make it happen. I mean, yes, you know, it'd be nice if it was in the entire city. I mean, this is a plan that has been devised by Gary Schaff, who was one of the other people in this group, and me. And I should say, also Christopher Brown, who's the local architect, and to some extent Tanya Graham, pardon me, and Stu, who's also a part of this process. So that's kind of where it's up to. I mean, there's other things that are on our list, but that's actually on our list.
Yeah. I would hope there's a lot of things on your list, personally, and that's kind of, you know, there should be a myriad of things on your list, and it seems like there's a fixation about this fuel
climate
use.
Change.
The fuel use. Banning is a scary thing because, like I say, the city council runs the city. It doesn't tell everybody in the city how to live, you know. And I think that's the resistance.
So a few years ago, when it looked like we were going to come up against a real water shortage, the Public Works, and along with the mayor and whoever else, said that we need to cut back our water consumption 30% or something. Within a few days, the citizens of Ashland cut back even further. Well, that shows two things. One, it shows that we use a hell of a lot more than we need. But it shows that citizens of Ashland are willing to take action if they can see a reason for it, and it's right in line with our values. So I don't think we need to be maybe as shy as we might be about asking people.
That's an excellent point, and I remember that. And then Mr. Miller over here, he reduced our use through smart use of our resource and then converting to TID and things like that. So, you know, you made some great gains when the chips were down. But that's a voluntary thing, you know, the community reducing their water. It's the same thing here. Tell them, hey, if you use less of this fuel, it's going to be a good thing. And then they can voluntarily reduce that fuel. I am 100% behind that.
I'm not arguing you're not.
No, I'm just saying that's an excellent point.
To build on who we are as a community and what ideas we have and what our commitment's been, that's all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a couple things like on the maintenance end for us, like an example, we have weed abatement every year that the fire department puts on us, and we have to go out and mow down or weedy down a 30-foot barrier around all our properties. We cut out weed eaters. We can't do that.
Well, I think what we should do is we should put this all in context. The first thing to do is look at the usage, and then start talking about it from there. So
yeah,
I think, John, I agree with you. If we could lead by example, if we were at a point where we could say, you know, we've cut our usage of two cycle engines down to whatever percent, and we're still successful in maintaining the people aren't seeing a change in the parks, then I think it'd be easy for us to make that argument to the community and say, we think you can do it as well. I think that would be a logical approach, in my opinion, to kind of look at what we're doing now, look at what we can do, and then how that looks as far as implementation. Because I understand that it would be great to just ban these things, and that would solve one problem, but creates another problem. You know, and I think it wherever your priorities. I mean, you know, obviously you could say, well, this one's so important that the other problems are merely aesthetic or whatever, but it is true. And I think that we need to, that one thing does affect another. It's a system. When you do something to one part of the system, it affects the other parts. So we need to have all of those discussions, and I don't think we're going to get there today. Today we need
It was a great start. Discussion. I was begging for a discussion. I love the interaction. I want to have disagreements. I want to have understanding. And Joanne, you should show up to these new meetings too, because you bring a certain different process and have good ideas and make people discuss those as far as you know, like your thoughts on voluntary reduction is a powerful thing, but it's got to be voluntary. If you start banning things, I know human nature comes into this in psychology.
I think we need both, but yeah.
I think we could probably come up with a plan over time to reduce so much and ask the people to do the same thing. I mean, I think it's logical. So let me just make sure we got this straight so next time we meet, you guys can pick a schedule to meet sooner than 3 months from now. I don't think it'll take us that long, but what we could do is we can get together our total fuel usage, and we're talking gasoline, right?
I would say diesel, gas, natural gas.
Okay, diesel, gas, natural gas, all three. And we will do our best to break it down into categories.
Yeah, new projects and existing maintenance is the first.
Yeah. So, but I would like, what I would do is break it down into, you know, how much we're using natural gas.
where it's going, you know, which like the pool's using this much versus all the structures together or something like that. The gasoline, like I said before, the small engines, the larger equipment, vehicles, and then whatever else we can think of. And we'll come up with some categories that will be helpful.
Excellent.
And so that's what I'm saying we can bring back to the next meeting. And we will go off of the last fiscal year that ended June 30th. Because that's a
you
full
mean,
fiscal
as
year.
As a base.
As a base.
Oh, yeah. That
so that's what we will do is we'll go off of the last full fiscal year that we have. And I think we can do that. And then that would be give us some context to the discussion and see what we have control over.
That's great. That's awesome. Thank you very much. I have a little bit of bad news, which is that I have to actually leave at 3:30, which is in 12 minutes.
I'm just glad we got the boilerplate out of the way first quickly and then get to the real nitty gritty. And so I'm really excited. I finally got to discuss some of my points and hear other people's ideas. And anybody else have anything to comment on here?
Just one thing real quick on like tick cycle. The majority of the people that we'll run into in the parks when we're using the leaf blower is not so much the two-cycle emissions, it's the noise.
The sound, yeah.
That is probably 95% of the people coming up make that comment. We've started using the electric blowers downtown on Tuesday mornings in conjunction with the street sweeper when we line that up, and I'm finding that it's taken staff twice as long to produce what we
get
in the past. And then if the debris is wet, it's even longer. So those are some issues that are going to have to eventually be worked out, I think, in the long run. And it's based on just power of the, you know, of what's the product we have now.
And that's that's reality. And that's what we need to hear, because reality bases it better to know what cause and effect, and then how can we, like Julian's ideas, maybe do less of it, about half of it, but you know, cut down a little bit so you don't have to expend the same amount of time. You get, because time is money, as we all know. And so, you know, this is a whole adjustment thing that I'm excited about, and we can all discuss whether it's going to work or not, or what's the most important. But there's a lot of different fronts we can move on, and I didn't get to the Thanksgiving group and the firemen, but next year I swear I will be pressuring them to not use paper plates and plastic cups again, and because I didn't make it to this Thanksgiving, but the one before that there were bags of this stuff. And we have a dishwasher at the senior center. You too.
Oh,
with the cardboard.
He gave it to me. I hesitated, but I didn't want to insult him.
The Lend a Plate group is way more than that. That you can buy doggy bag stuff, so you can take your food home. You tell people at the restaurant, hey, don't put that in a plastic bag. You know, just give it to me that way. And you have to refine your whole lifestyle, and that's a really hard thing. It's human nature and psychology. I don't know. Really difficult to affect change, as we know, and especially under our environment of the national scene, it's pretty disappointing. But hey, I'm not giving up. I'm just realistic, and parks is important to me too. You know, it's definitely the most important department in the city.
Actually. That's right. So we need to pick a date while Julian's still here.
Yeah, I'm sorry to be not be able to stay here for the full meeting. So do you want to? How long do you suppose people would need to come up with some sort of an inventory?
I'd prefer to meet towards the end of January, just because we have the holidays. We got people coming and going. If it was straight time, no holidays, we could do it a month from now. But if you're okay with that.
I'd say sooner than later, but that's just me, because I'm retired and I got time to burn.
Well, let me. So, what dates are you available?
Sorry, guys.
So, what dates are you available
I know it's not going to be hard to pull up the data. It's just the categorization of it is going to be the part that takes a little bit of research. We could, the soonest I think we could meet would be the week of the 13th or the 20th of January. That'd be the soonest.
What is it?
13th or 20th of January, that week.
Whatever works for Julian.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I don't have my schedule to tell you about at the moment. But do you want to just tentatively say the 21st? Is that enough time to get it all done?
It's enough time,
or
I think.
To get a reasonable idea about what's going on?
I mean, all the data exists. We just need to split it up. We can come back on the 21st with whatever we have, and it's going to be a fruitful discussion no matter what. So.
Okay.
And is there any way to invite Stu and make it formal?
Yeah, certainly.
That way, and if he could send something that he's doing in our packet before the meeting, I'm not privy to any of that. I have no idea what's going on there. So
what would be the goal of having Stu here, to present to us or to be part of the discussion?
Well, if we don't have a lot of non-conservation and sustainability things on our agenda, then we can take an hour to discuss, mm-hmm. And he could present to us how we can be part of the city team. I mean, you guys are probably way more privy.
All right, that's
Mike probably knows what's going on, but I personally don't. I'm not sure. Do I have to go get a meeting with him?
So that's
probably
what we can do. We'll ask him. We can ask him to come in and give us a presentation or give us some information on how this group can be involved in with what SEEP is doing.
And what they are actually doing.
And have SEEP be involved with what we're doing.
Yeah.
And an example and examples of what they're working on right now.
But so you already sit on the SEEP thing?
I do, but I mean, Michael has a point. Like, I'm not there as a commissioner particularly.
Yeah.
I'm just there as a...
And I think we need to make that... What we need to do is we need to...
have a representative.
Have a representative from...
Formalize it
and have the mayor acknowledge that there should be someone from Parks sitting on that and you're the person, but if you weren't here anymore, it would still be important for us to have somebody on that commission, wouldn't you think?
Are you a voting? Is it a voting membership thing? You right now?
I don't know that we've actually voted on anything, but
yeah,
I think
I am
a voting member.
A lot of times we're just liaisons as opposed to actually a voting.
I think he was appointed by the mayor.
Yeah. Okay, so he would be
committee member.
Yeah. So. More than just a liaison, you should have a seat at this. Seems to me. I mean,
I think
like
so.
I say, I'm pretty much lacking of information here.
Then the other thing is, if we have an official seat at the table as Parks Commissioners, you guys as Parks Commissioners, we can make sure that they're periodically you're updating the commissioners, giving them feedback on what's going on at these meetings, just like the art. Commission, which is more of a liaison, seniors is an actual committee, RDAC, all those different things. So what we can do is I'll talk to Mike and we'll talk to the mayor about making that official Parks spot.
Okay. Sounds good. Okay. Then was there anything else that we wanted
anybody
to
do? Anybody have anything to say at this point?
Or you're welcome to keep.
I'm glad I came to this meeting. Thank you all for
No, thank you.
It was a good one?
For being, well, it's just like
a rousing discussion. Hopefully I didn't burn too many bridges.
Stuff.
You don't want to burn the bridge before you try to cross. That's I found that out. You burn it later, but you don't.
Well, I think we got
don't
some
burn
good,
it before you get across it.
I think you should feel good that the next time we meet we're gonna be
the first step on a pathway going forward.
Yeah.
And it's the first step on probably a longer path, but it's happening. And it's you can say this is where it starts. So.
Yeah, and I guess a couple other things. It is reasonably likely that the Conservation Commission, I don't know if anybody here is on or is part of the Conservation Commission or like goes to their meetings or anything like that, but they are going to ask the City Council to declare a climate emergency, which doesn't have any sort of specific list of tasks or anything associated with it. But it is a mechanism to begin to develop a list of tasks for the city to take on to reduce its greenhouse gas emissions
mm-hmm.
beyond
good
just
point.
APRC and also beyond two-stroke engines. But anyway, but that's I think that they will at least be asking the city council to do that. I don't know if the city council is going to go ahead with it, but it's coming up sometime soon.
And I think your point is that's another commission that we really need to hear from.
Isn't that
what
the,
they're doing?
Isn't that the seed commission?
There's a conservation commission, which is different than the climate policy commission.
That's the you're on the climate policy.
Right.
And the conservation. Is the climate policy an ad hoc committee? Is it going to go away someday? Or?
I think that it's a permanent committee at the moment, I believe. Yeah, it's not labeled.
Is there overlap with the conservation commission?
Not per se, but James McGinnis comes to the meetings mostly.
Okay.
And I was going to talk, and I was going to try and coordinate with him what's going forward, because yes, they're like two halves of the same thing, or two pieces of the same thing.
All right.
So it's not meant to be separate, you know, jobs or anything. But there, but you know, strictly speaking, there's not overlapping membership or anything like that to sort of enforce the coordination or anything.
Okay.
Just so you don't feel bad either, this meeting was actually only scheduled for 3:30, so it's not like you're you're not bailing in the meeting.
I'm not in trouble. Oh, good.
I thought it was only scheduled for 3:30.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Usually I'm in trouble, but maybe not this one. I guess I'll leave this stuff here.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Julie.
So I think the Thief Commission timed out.
Yeah.
The idea was for a commission or two to be appointed to move the work forward.
I think the meeting's over since he left.
You know, during the meeting.
Not that I know anything, but
yeah, so that sounds